All right, welcome to the Start Writing Podcast. I'm Joe Bendosky. Today I have an interview with Thorne Coyle. She is our second of three authors who will be discussing on how she is using Patreon. But first, I just want to give people an update. We sent the newsletter out, I believe, a week ago, where we informed you of some of the coming changes. Jay and I started the podcast as a way to kind of build our platform and help us learn and understand the craft and marketing of writing better as we work to compile episodes. In the last few months, we've found some very effective tools that are working better for us. So we want to invest a little bit more time in our writing. We're both a little bit behind on some of our deadlines and our launch dates. So we're going to be cutting back to just one episode a month. Our main focus will just be continuing the craft episodes through this period. But if you want to write in and make a request or anything, then we would be happy to kind of compose one on one of the other topics that we usually cover, which is our marketing or our grammar episodes there. But yeah, so as far as the newsletter goes, we will not be sending that out either. I informed everyone there. So you can sign up for what you want, but like I said, we're not going to be sending it out. The keywords we had put together, it was a big project for us, and we'd spent a lot of hours on it. And then we looked over the data over the last couple weeks, and we had maybe 7 people, 8 people, even sometimes 6 people coming to the page. So clearly it was something that a lot of you were not interested in. It wasn't something that was helping you in your writing careers. So we're going to leave those up, but we will not be farming any new ones. We're just going to, you know, pull the ones that are specific to our genre and just kind of do our own thing there as we were before. So the podcast isn't going away. Like I said, we're just cutting back to one a month. We're not going to be actively pursuing interviews. We do have one more scheduled, and I was contacted by a writer who is a specialist on the story grid and had mentioned maybe doing an interview. So I'm actually really excited, and I think that'll be a great interview. But like I said, I'm not going to be trying to pursue authors and arrange interviews. If they contact us and they have something interesting to say that we think would be good for us and you, then we will definitely bring them on the show and put those out as specials. But for now, those are kind of the things that are going to fall by the wayside as we try to focus a little bit more on our writing. And that time has got to come from our free time, because Jay and I still both work, 40 hours a week. So yeah, so those are some of the changes that are coming. So this will be the last episode of May. At the beginning of June, you'll have the craft episode there. And then we have another interview that month that we've already arranged. And then probably in July, there'll be the following interview there as well. Our plans for the future is, as Jay and I's author's career are slowly starting to take off, we hope that when we go full time in our writing, we'll be able to bring the podcast back to an episode a week. And ideally, at one point in the future, we would like to bring in a third co-host as a romance writer, just because over half of all fiction is romance, and even in those that aren't in the romance genre, almost all of them have a romance subplot. So that's kind of our vision for the future. We'll see what happens there. But this is a great interview with Thorne. I learned a ton talking to her, and maybe one day in the future we'll put together a marketing episode on Patreon. But for now, we have these three interviews that we're putting together that kind of are going to make up that information. And so here is the interview with Thorne. Okay, so this is my guest, Thorne Coyle. Am I saying that correctly?
Yes.
Yes. So why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself, your how you started your writing journey, and tell us about what you tend to write in general and why.
Well, first of all, thanks for having me on. Second, I've been writing since I was a child. I've always written, and I have been a traditionally published author with nonfiction books on spiritual practice and magic. And I have a lot of short stories published in anthologies and magazines. I've written essays and articles that have also been collected, etc. And the last few years, however, I've been focusing on novels, and mostly I write urban fantasy, which is sometimes coupled with alternate history and often deals with themes of power, magic, and justice. So my new series that I'm launching this week in late April is The Witches of Portland, And my previous series that came out last summer was the Panther Chronicles.
Okay, so The Witches of Portland, just to kind of help us maybe better understand your writing a little bit more, give us the premise and maybe the blurb or the summary of that book or that series.
Well, the whole series is about a group of 9 witches. It's a coven, and each of the witches gets their own book. And so the first one that's launching this week is by Earth, and the tagline for that is "Haunted by the Dead, She Fights for the Living." And it's about a woman who had moved to Portland trying to outrun ghosts, and they start haunting her again. And there's a big mystery. The city's in peril, and it all has to do with the ghosts and with this man, Joe, that walks into the cafe haunted by his dead girlfriend. So I think it's a really fun series. It's fast-paced. My first readers so far keep asking for more, so that's always a compliment and good. And that's about it. The tagline for the whole series is "Magic is ordinary, life is not."
So
it's, it's about the confluence of magic in the world and just trying to make a living, going to work, you know, your ordinary life, and yet amazing things keep happening to these witches.
So here you mentioned something interesting that I wanted to talk about a little bit, and I saw this on your website as well. So what you're writing is alternate history urban fantasy. So talk to me about that choice versus just world creation.
So the alternate history, I end up doing alternate history in a lot of my short fiction. I actually run the gamut in my short fiction. But the main alternate history thread came through the Panther Chronicles series, because I'd always had a big what if about a historical moment. My big what if was, what would have happened historically if Fred Hampton of the Black Panthers had not been assassinated? And how would the world have changed? And so that was my premise. And then moving from there, I threw in sorcery, shapeshifters, you know, J. Edgar Hoover was an evil magician. You know, I just really had a lot of fun building an alternate history fantasy world. So it's based on actual history and yet a complete departure
from it.
Yeah, yes.
Well, I imagine that will probably make it easier for readers to track some of the bigger characters. Like you mentioned J. Edgar Hoover. We know who that is kind of immediately from history, but at the same time, yes, he's a fiction. Your whole world is kind of fiction at this point once you make that departure from history.
Yes, exactly. And The Witches of Portland is not alternate history. It's set in contemporary times and just pumping the magic into that world.
So just urban fantasy.
Yeah.
So, okay. So, the big thing we did want to talk to you about is Patreon, your experience yes. with it and everything. So first of all, talk to me about why, well, let's go back. So you started nonfiction and then you switched into fiction. So talk to me about why the change into fiction and why indie publishing versus traditional, since that's where you started.
So I actually wrote fiction many, many years ago. I wrote a lot of poetry. I wrote short stories. I wrote a bunch of, you know, half or two-thirds finished novels. I wrote plays. So that was the direction I thought I was heading. But I did the typical thing of some newer writers. I was in a critique group and we would labor over, you know, one short story a year. Or as I said, I wouldn't finish my novels, the typical thing. And then I started writing nonfiction, got a big traditional publishing deal with Tarcher Penguin, a huge advance, and said, okay, well, I'll focus on nonfiction now because it's clearly easier. It's easier for me to finish. It's easier for me to sell. I'm just going to go that route. And so I just put fiction on the back burner. And then around 3.5-4 years ago, I was sitting in my living room looking out the window and I had a thought enter my head that was clearly not my thought. And it was a character wanting a story written. And so I was like, well, who are you? What's going on? And the story of Jonah and Alex came out and I wrote the standalone novel Like Water, which I published 3 years ago. And
so did you go traditional on that, or was that an indie?
No, that was indie. And that was the other thing. So not only did these characters come through, my love for fiction came back and I realized, oh, I don't have to be tied to traditional publishing to get my work out in the world. I can just do this myself. And so I really, really started studying heavily, both getting my writing craft chops up and studying indie business. I was already starting to be unhappy with being traditionally published with my nonfiction anyway. I actually have indie published a couple of nonfiction books now as well. It was clear to me that I wanted more control over my career.
So I guess what happened? Why were you unhappy?
You know, that first fabulous big advance contract was a terrible contract in hindsight. You know, I had an agent who I thought was doing right by me, and he did right by getting me this great contract. I even had a bidding war on that first book, Evolutionary Witchcraft. But, you know, they took all my world rights, everything, because I didn't know any better. This was 15 years ago. And, you know, over the years, I've had people in different countries say, I love this book. I'd love to translate it and publish it. And I'm like, yeah, you got to talk to my giant publisher and you'll never hear back from them.
Right.
You know, so I gave them rights that they don't even use.
Yeah, that is pretty standard in publishing contracts. They will claim as many rights as they can get their hands on.
Yes, and these days it's worse because now everyone's savvy that IP is worth something. And so some publishers are just doing IP grabs.
Yeah.
You know, and then I went with a more medium-sized publishing house thinking I would get more support. And they still didn't give me the support I needed. You know, I would show up to teach somewhere in Australia and my books wouldn't be there.
Oh, my word.
You know, so I was like, you know, that was the one thing I asked for you was support with publicity and with the fact that I, you know, was traveling and teaching workshops all the time. And I didn't get that either. So I thought, well, I may as well just do it myself.
Yeah. Well, I mean, your experience makes it very clear why you went indie. So
yes.
If your books aren't there, you can only blame you. Or I guess if you have a VA, then it's their fault, right?
Right. I mean, you know, on one hand, I'm grateful. You know, traditional publishing was the right thing for me at the time, and it did help me build my audience.
Yeah.
So I'm not unhappy with it. I just now cringe at some of the contracts I signed.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and I occasionally I'll have somebody who, you know, is debating going one way or another. And one of the things we do is we look at contracts that they've been offered and say, now, if you'll look here, they're claiming a lot of rights. And I'll explain to them and be like, publishing companies are like optimistic entrepreneurs, or I guess optimistic weight losers, right? They are convinced in the next 6 months, they're going to have this complete transformation and open up new markets, just like people who are convinced this is the year, this is the month I finally lose that 10, 15, 30 pounds. And the truth is most people don't. Their bodies stay the same year after year. And it's the same with publishing companies. They're convinced that in the next 6 months, in the next year, they're going to open a new market and they're going to use these rights they're claiming, but they usually don't. And so they claim a lot of rights that they'll never get around to using, but they honestly think that they will one day.
That's an interesting perspective. And I think it's true. And it certainly was true with that first book I sold. They really thought, oh, this is going to launch a new line for us. And frankly, the book sold quite well, but it didn't sell well enough for them.
Right.
You know, and that's always going to be the case too. You know, so I would say these days, if I had any interest in traditional publishing, you know, I would just run a contract by an IP lawyer, I would keep a bunch of my rights and see if they still wanted to do anything for a pile of money. That would kind of be the only way I would consider it. And I wouldn't consider it. That's kind of a pipe dream that a publisher would even allow me to have to keep the rights I would be interested in keeping.
For example. You really only get those contracts if you go huge. So huge that they won't ignore you anymore. And
Then
you basically can just set whatever terms you want
because
they really have a monopoly on the physical books.
You know? Yeah. So, you know, if you're Bella Andre, you know, you can get your fabulous print only deal, et cetera. for a ton of money. But she also doesn't need it. She's making so much money as an indie.
Yeah.
She really has the best of both worlds. And there are a few people like that, but I think that there are few.
They are few. But I think as publishing goes forward, we're going to see more of that, right? Because without them there's so many authors who just get too much pushback from publishing industry that they go indie. And so a lot of, really great authors are not being cultivated by traditional publishing companies,
right.
they're writing in the indie markets, right?
So, yep.
So I think, 10, 15 years down the road, traditional publishing will maintain its monopoly on print, but they're going to be basically, instead of going through agents to harvest talent, they'll be going through indie authors.
Yeah. And we're already, of course, seeing some of that.
Yeah. So that's what I think, who knows what really happened. So let's get off the tangent and go back to Patreon. So that's why you went indie.
Okay.
And so you launched your indie career. When did you go Patreon and why?
I think I started my Patreon 2 years ago. I think that's correct. I actually started Patreon, interestingly enough, to bridge my audience. I chose to publish both fiction and nonfiction under my name, T. Thorne Coyle. I didn't want to set up a pen name for my fiction. I had spent a lot of time and years cultivating relationship with all these people who were interested in my work, and I didn't want to give that up. And since I was writing, since I already had a career based a lot around magic and justice, and I was writing books about magic and justice, it seemed like it was going to be an okay transition. So I started a Patreon. I'm going to back up a second. I had stopped my blog for a while. I just said to people, I need to focus on fiction. I'm getting my writing chops up. I need to write all these novels, and I don't see what's in it for me. I don't have anything to say anymore, for one thing, and I don't see what's in it for me. Well, people really missed my blog. And so I said, okay, if you pay me, I will give you one essay and one short story a month. So you'll get the nonfiction from me you're wanting, but you also have to read my fiction, right? And so I actually used it as a way to bridge that old audience into a new audience, and then try to build a new audience. And it worked. People signed on, and I give them an advance PDF of the essay and the short story before it goes out. And then my agreement with them is then I post them in public for free. Now my short stories, I leave up free for a limited time, a month or two, and then I take them down, and then I can put them in collections, or I can put them up for sale as, individual stories if I want, or put them in bundles, things like that. And then the essays stay up forever. So that's my arrangement with them, with my patrons and supporters.
Okay. Well, yeah, that's really interesting that it was this blog following that that kind of rolled over into the Patreon.
Yeah.
Okay. So talk to me about that's how it started and got launched. So talk to me about building a following. What are the things you've done that have worked in building your Patreon, and what are the things that didn't work?
So I'm going to talk to you about the reason why I did some of the things I did the way I did them. Because it's easy to look at Patreon accounts who have a gazillion followers and are making $10,000 a month and say, yeah, I want to do what they're doing. And they're all behind a Patreon paywall. I think for lower level people, people who don't have huge audiences of rabid fans, people who are just starting out, or who are, have a more modest writing career, I would say don't put your stuff behind the paywall. Because what works for me, and this is why I set it up this way, is I want to be able to put out an essay, and at the end of that essay it says, this is reader-funded writing.
Huh.
Here's my Patreon account. Thank you to all these patrons who have supported me. this month. You want to, you know, you want these perks, here's a link, right? So every essay and every short story I send out, I make clear, even when I post it on Facebook, I say, this month's reader-funded short story, right? I make it clear. So every post is a little ad for Patreon and my Patreon account. Whereas if it was behind a paywall, people would say, well, why should I give you money? I don't know what you're doing. And right. It also, then I'm just shilling, join my Patreon account, be a supporter, but I'm not giving you anything for it. It makes it more advertising rather than relationship building, if that makes sense.
That makes sense. Yeah.
So that really works well for me. And people are very excited. People are really interested in supporting the free essays and free short stories. They're happy to get them a couple days in advance, just to know that they're funding quality writing that then is going to be offered to the public. So it gives them something. And then also it gives me the opportunity to share things that wouldn't otherwise get shared. And then the third thing is, it tells people who don't already know, oh, Thorne has a Patreon account. I like her writing. I'm going to give her $1 a month or $5 a month or whatever, right? So the other thing I've been doing is I always post, so I always send the blog or the essay or the short story to my patrons first. They get that. Plus they get other perks once a year. And then I post it after a couple of days to the blog on my website. So then I'm populating my website blog, which is also good. Mm-hmm. So then there's content always on my website that's fresh twice a month. And then a week later, with the essays especially, I post them to Medium. And the reason I do that is Medium has a different audience. It's easier to share for people, and Facebook likes those links better for sharing.
Oh, interesting.
I didn't know that. I use Medium as free advertising. It takes me 5 minutes a month to do that work.
Right.
Now, Medium now keeps trying to get me behind their paywall. They want me to write for them, and I just keep saying no because I want control of my writing. Right. Yeah. And it's also why I make sure I post it on my blog first. It's clear it's my content.
Yeah.
Medium, I only ever do a week later, and I only use it as free advertising for my writing, for my work. And again, at the bottom, I say, this is reader-funded writing. Want to join my Patreon crew? Mm-hmm. Here's how you do it, right? So it's cultivating a slightly different audience and spreading people's knowledge, you know, of my writing, my work, and building relationship with people that I wouldn't otherwise encounter.
Right. Yeah, definitely a good thing there. Okay. So let's talk retention. Is there anything you do specifically to develop retention, or have you had issues with it, or have you not even thought about it?
I have not. I've had so little drop off. I haven't really had issues with retention, and I just feel like people will come and go as their income allows. When Patreon tried to recently change their pay-in scale, they wanted the patrons to pay rather than the creators to pay. It was terrible. It was great for the creators who make a ton of money. It was terrible for people who were making, you know, the $100 a month that means they can pay their phone bill.
So wait, explain this to me. What are you talking about? So as a creator, what are you paying to Patreon?
As a creator, Patreon takes a tiny percentage of what I make every month. It's how it works, right? It's how they keep going. And I'm like, that's great. I'm happy to pay you a percentage of my income every month.
So what was this change you're talking about?
They wanted to add a charge to the patrons, rather than having the creators pay a percentage.
That seems crazy.
It was terrible. And, you know, it was negligible if you were a person who pledged $10 to two people. But that's not how a lot of people use Patreon. I pay $1 to $5 to like 20 people, right? And if all of a sudden I had to pay a fee on 20 transactions, yeah, I'm not going to be able to afford it. So a lot of people were losing their lower level patrons. And the lower level patrons are frankly the lifeblood of most patrons.
Yeah. Wow.
Like, they're the people we want to cultivate, are the people that only have a dollar a month to give.
Yeah. But it's volume, you know?
Yes.
Because, you know, for most people, a dollar is not huge. It's so much that you don't even notice. So you don't mind, you know, supporting your artist.
Yes. So I sent out a note immediately to my patrons saying, hey, this is happening. I'm fighting it. I'm contacting Patreon right now. And I just want to let you know, if you need to leave, I understand. And all these people said, you know, we're staying with you. We want to support you. I think I lost a couple of people. Some people lost quite a few people. It had high impact. I tried to head it off at the pass by letting them know immediately I was fighting it. And we did win. Patreon backpedaled and said, oops.
I'll bet they did. Yeah. That was a terrible idea.
It was terrible. Unfortunately, some creators had already lost a bunch of their income.
Yeah. Well, and it might be hard to get those people back. That's too bad.
It is too bad. So, but now it's back to the way it should work, in my opinion, which is the creators just pay a percentage. I mean, that's how everything works, right?
Yeah.
You know, if I'm using your system and I'm making income, then you take a small percentage so that the system can function.
Yep. So, okay. So now let's talk about future expansion. So you mentioned you're writing these essays, these short stories, and they're going out on your blog, and they're going out on Medium. And at the bottom, you're mentioning, you know, this is Patreon supported writing. Are you doing anything else to expand your audience on Patreon?
Yes. There's something I did at the very start that was really helpful, and I need to get back to it, which is every time a couple of people would sign up as patrons, I would give them a shout out on Facebook and Twitter. And so not only was that a great thanks to my patrons, it also, again, let people know, oh, Thorn has a Patreon.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. And I've grown lax with that. I do thank everyone at the end of every essay and blog and short story, but it's not enough. I need to get back to that because it works on so many levels. So that's one thing I really recommend you do. I do occasionally post a short story or an essay that feels a little more popular. I will pay for a little advertising for those on occasion. But frankly, right now, I'm not doing much to boost it, and I should, really. I need to get back to some of the practices I did when I launched it. And those are two things I did when I launched that were very effective.
Okay. Yeah. Just to mention our previous conversation, if you're okay, if I mention your numbers here on Patreon.
Sure.
So your total patrons are 84, and you were mentioning, you know, it's these lower patrons. Tier one is 25 and tier two is 35. So that's over 50% of your patrons right there.
Yep. Exactly. Exactly. And those people are great. You know, and as I said, that's how I support a lot of creators.
Right. Just those. Yeah. Those that tier one and there's tier two. Okay, so if we can cover just really quickly how you decided to set up your reward tiers, and then we want to do a shout out on where to find your work and you. So
yeah, so before we get into that, I want to mention one other thing that authors may find interesting, which is especially for folks who are starting out or are kind of mid-level and don't have like reader magnets or loss leader books. One of the things that I've done is I used my short story collections from my Patreon stories. I collected them and then I use those as to build up my email list, right? That's my reader magnet. I say, hey, get this collection of magical short stories in exchange for your email address. And so my Patreon stories are now having another life, right?
Oh, that's great.
Right. So I wrote them. I've already gotten paid for them. And now I'm able to offer them to people in exchange for joining my newsletter. So that's a little tip.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, definitely.
So now for tiers, when I launched my Patreon, I had way too many tiers. I was way too complicated. Within a month, I scaled back. I think I have three tiers now. I'm having, three or four tiers. I'm not promising you the moon. I'm not going to, start mm-hmm. a podcast and do this and do that, if I make a bunch of money.
How many tiers did you start with?
I don't remember. It was too many. Because I was looking at successful Patreon accounts, and some of them had a lot of tiers. So I thought, well, I need a lot of tiers. Mm. But you don't want to get into a situation where you're going to have to deliver a bunch of stuff.
Right.
I actually should go through and simplify some of my rewards, because some of my rewards I have were things I thought up, just out of the top of my head when I started.
Yeah.
And I realized people don't actually want those rewards. What people want is an advanced copy of my new novel for free. And if you've just given me $300, because stuff adds up, I'm giving you a couple novels, right? And heck, I'll send you paper copies of those. Right. Yeah. So that's an easy thing for me to fulfill. So be careful that you're not getting into the fulfillment trap. I mean, it's what kills a lot of people with things like Kickstarter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You want to be a writer. You don't want to be a product fulfiller.
Huh. Yeah, that's a very good point. Okay.
And so keep it simple. I try to keep it simple, but I try to also keep it something that's actually of value to people that they're actually going to want.
Yeah. Okay. Any last tips then for Patreon, lessons you've learned?
A little gratitude goes a long way. We're all in this together trying to support creativity and culture and trying to hopefully spread some entertainment and beauty and hopefulness in this world. And Patreon for me is a great way to be part of that process. And so I'm really grateful to everyone who supports my Patreon. I'm grateful to all my patrons, and I try to convey that. And I think they feel it, and it's another reason why they continue to support me. It's a mutual agreement. So I know some people get frustrated. It can be frustrating trying to make a living and trying to get the word out. So that's all. I just reiterate that a little gratitude goes a long way.
Okay. Well, in that line, we are very grateful for you to take the time and talk to us. Why don't you tell us where we can find you, your Patreon, and your books and everything that you're involved in?
Thorncoil.com. It's all on there. And I'm also all over social media. And then Patreon, of course, I'm just patreon.com/thorncoil.
So, and that is coil, COYLE. And
Thorn is THORN.
Yeah, no E on the end of that. So, and then your books are Amazon. You say The Witches of Portland is coming out here in the next week. If they want to pick up something today, what would you recommend?
Actually, you can pre-order By Earth, book one of Witches of Portland, as a 99-cent ebook right now, and you'll get it tomorrow, Friday.
Oh, well, there you go.
April 26th, and then books 2, 3, and 4 are coming out in pretty quick succession after that.
All right. So that sounds great. Thank you very much for your time.
You're very welcome.
As always, thanks for listening. A reminder that we are cutting down to just one episode a month. We will set it up to release some of the older episodes during that time period, just because the way it's set up with our server Podbean, they are only allowing, I think, 20 episodes at a time to be available on iTunes. We haven't figured out how to change that yet. So for now, this will kind of be how you can catch up on those old episodes. We'll just release them. And then you can check them out if you're newer to the show and you have a hard time accessing the older catalog on the podcast app of your choice. If you enjoy the show, feel free to leave us a review or tell some friends about it. And thanks for listening.